Hi, welcome to Gibberjee's new episode of the Secret Guide to Fundraising podcast. I'm Ella, Gibberjee's Global Client Services Director, and as a team of fundraising experts, Gibberjee helps clients raise as much money as possible online and at events. As you may know, on this podcast, we dive into the tips, tricks, and trends that will help nonprofits raise more. Today, we'll be talking to Olivia Baston-Pitt about the building and maintaining of partnerships with key impact sponsors. We're also discussing the power of collaboration for the nonprofit sector and how it can be achieved effectively. Olivia is a senior sponsorship manager for Common Goal, who mobilises the football industry to pledge a minimum of 1% of all revenue to drive progress. They team up with high-impact community organisations to help reshape society into an equal playing field for all. As the senior sponsorship manager, Olivia works primarily with Common Goal's partnership with Adidas and ensures that the relationship achieves the most impact possible. Olivia, thank you so much for being here today. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's a cloudy day in Berlin, but it's great to be here. So thank you for having me.
No problem at all. So you're in Berlin currently.
Yeah. You can tell I'm English, maybe from the accent, but our head office is here. So I moved with the job. So it's a fun place to live.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure it's similar cold weather as we just head into Halloween tomorrow.
Yeah, as always, it's quite similar. I would just say the summers are better. So it's one bonus.
Well, great. So as I briefly touched on, Common Goal has some bold objectives. But for those who don't know, could you tell our listeners a little bit about Common Goal as an organisation and what their mission is?
Yeah, so maybe we sort of go back to the beginning. So we've been around over 20 years and we started under the name of Street Football World. And Street Football World is a very much a community-led approach. So we united the Football for Good network around the world. So this is where our sort of community started. And that to this day is still our core value and what drives us. But in order for us to maximize football's impact on people and planet, Common Goal was born. In order to really sort of bridge the gap between football as a business and football for social transformation. So it's really that sort of tool to how we can enable and drive more impact. Our approach is we do it through radical collaboration. So as you mentioned before, but we really enable collaboration at the heart of what we do in order to sort of enable that change. And the movement is built in order to sort of create a platform so every stakeholder can meaningfully participate and engage and act. So yeah, it's been a journey, but it's been an incredible one. And I joined around 2 years ago, so always under the name of Common Goal, but Street Football World is at the heart of what we do. And so yeah, it's been a good evolution to where we are now.
Great. And primarily, you said you're based in Berlin. Is it primarily focused on Europe, or sort of where's your reach?
Yeah, global. So we have near to 200 community organizations around the world. We work with over 100 members. So that's partners. Players, coaches, clubs. So we really bring everybody from the football community together, and we're global. So we have programs running in every continent, to mostly every continent. And we obviously have organizations that are operating in the countries that I mentioned. So yeah, it's a global operation. Our HQ is in Berlin, and we have other satellite offices in our key markets, but we're global in terms of the impact and the reach that we have through our community.
Great. And your role as a senior sponsorship manager, so where does that fit into the piece of the puzzle?
Yeah, so I work in partnerships, but as you can imagine, brands, corporates are like a key stakeholder in the football industry in terms of their ability to create change because of their reach and their influence in terms of the power they do hold in the football industry. So my role is one, it's enabling the financial sustainability. So really, how can we unlock more funding that goes to the high impact projects we have around the world through corporates? But it's also, it's such a key role in sort of changing the narrative. So brands have an incredible reach in terms of their consumers. So And as you can imagine, purpose and impact nowadays is a key word that is used across the board. I think the industry has now realized that purpose can enable profit, and it doesn't have to be the other way around. So it's really, if brands are now going to put purpose into their brand strategies, they have to back that up with credible proof. So as my role, it's also sort of creating that guidance to how we can actually communicate around it and make sure that what we are communicating is real. So yeah, I suppose it's a vital role in many sort of aspects. But I mean, as we know, corporates play a vital role in football and outside of football as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you work with Adidas as one of your brands. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, my role is predominantly with Adidas, but we have other partners. But I think Adidas has been our key one since around 3 years ago across lots of different impact areas, gender equity, racial justice, LGBTQI plus inclusion. I feel quite lucky in that I love football, so that helps. And I also feel quite lucky that I can do this on a daily basis because it's really talking around the topic of purpose and impact each day, ultimately doing something far greater than myself and what I could do on my own. But in the partnership sphere, it's also highly exciting as well. As you can imagine with Adidas, their HQ has also been in Germany, but they have many, many teams, many, many employees around the world. So in terms of the opportunities, it's sort of endless. How can we sort of really engage with the different markets to really understand what their needs are? And that really matches with what common goal is it's a community-led approach. So we really have to listen and understand why and what communities need. And we can really enable that through sort of the global presence of Adidas as well. So from my side, it's a very exciting job to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds it. And Adidas is, of course, such a sort of globally recognized brand. How does that, do you think, sort of help with the impact of your projects at Common Goal?
I mean, first of all, it's obviously if it's Adidas or it's a startup, I mean, the key part is making sure the values are aligned. Like if the intention isn't there from the beginning, then you're probably going to run into problems not far down the line. So with Adidas, those are they're cemented at the beginning in terms of why we are partnering, which makes it a lot easier. But in terms of enabling the impact, what they have done is committed to a long-term investment. So they are there from the beginning. They understand that change doesn't happen overnight and that in order to create actual impact, that takes a few years, that takes time. So they are there for the journey and they're there to understand and listen to when things aren't working and are working and really sort of adapting as we go. In terms of enabling more impact, again, I said it before, but they've reached, they have a huge sort of power in terms of activating and engaging consumers to change the narrative in a positive way. So from that perspective, yeah, they're investing in the core impact, but in terms of what we can then do on top of that is also highly beneficial. So yeah. And then I suppose the other side would be, and this is across the board, but how can you embed purpose and impact KPIs alongside business KPIs? So how can you actually embed the purposes within the core mm-hmm. of the business? It's also key because you're going to have limitations to what you can actually achieve if you're not embedding purpose or seeing purpose and the impact results on the same level as the business results and the bottom line. And that is a slow progress. I don't think many are there yet. Not many are your Patagonias, to be quite honest, but they were started for very different reasons. But I do see that there was a shift in terms of how corporates and brands are starting to understand the benefit of purpose and impact in terms of embedding it within their decision-making.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously at Common Goal, I think there's two main sort of corporate impact sponsors that you work with. Do you have plans to expand that number? Are you sort of settled with the two that you have, or are you always looking for more?
Definitely more.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still a not-for-profit and I know we're a movement of, and we have a movement in terms of we have lots of other not-for-profits, but we also need to drive financial sustainability in order for us to actually achieve our mission and vision. But at the same time, do we need to also channel more funding to other organizations? So we do need to make sure we are onboarding new partners and identifying new partners. So at the moment, we have two key impact partners and we do have smaller partners. But what we are going through now is a process of really restructuring our team to make sure we have the resources in place to do that, because many will know within partnerships, onboarding partners takes a lot longer than retaining them. So you do need like a solid team there to be able to sort of make sure the funnel is full in order to convert them down the line. So that is sort of high priority for us over the next few years. And we've actually started to grow the team. So that's the first action that's happened. But maybe watch this space, but definitely more partners will definitely be coming on board. And that is the ambition in the short term to medium term.
Yeah, great. And what are some of the sort of key variables that you look at when you're deciding on a brand? I know you mentioned, you know, you've got to be aligned on purpose, but is there anything else when, you know, approaching brands that you look for and sort of make an impact on your decision?
Yeah, I mean, the first one would be the alignment on purpose. So you really dig in and do the analysis to understand their ESG or their CSR, their DEI initiatives, and what really is the focus for them. Because if you're sort of, I always say, throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping something sticks, then you're most likely not. It's not going to be the right partnership. So you really need to understand what drives them and what is important to them to really then make sure you are co-creating something that really works for both parties. Then the other side would be their sort of relevance or influence in the space. So for us, it's obviously football in terms of the main sort of driver here and connector. But we also look at it at first through a sports lens to understand what they are doing in the space. So do they have other sponsorships? Do they sponsor leagues? Do they sponsor players? Do they have different initiatives that are already out there that they're working on, just to kind of paint the picture and understand what they are doing, because they ultimately don't want to partner with us to do something they're already doing. You know, how can we actually fit in there to make sure we're amplifying what they're doing? I suppose it's those are the first key bit. And then the other bit would always be ethical fit. And we need to understand if they are doing it for the right reasons as well. So there's this sort of purpose washing and greenwashing. And that always, to me, goes back to the values first. But there is certain companies that we do feel that doesn't align. So you do have mining companies, betting companies. There's things like that that we do really need to analyze to make sure we understand the risks and opportunities. But I think we always say that we do welcome every stakeholder, and we do acknowledge that many stakeholders are at a different starting point, let's say, but we have to do that with caution. And I think the only way we do that is to really put the time and effort into understanding them as an organization to make sure that is the right fit. And we are also staying true to our vision and mission.
Absolutely. And once you have these brands on board, how important is the stewarding of that relationship and sort of maintaining that relationship? And do you have any sort of tips or tricks for other charities in that space on how to make sure they're sort of always improving and nurturing that relationship?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's vital. My main sort of experience and bread and butter is in the stewardship and account management part of things. And there's, I sort of do a, let's say, 80% in that, and then supporting the new business. But it costs more to acquire a new partner than it does to retain an existing one. So just on that point, it is so vital that you maintain that relationship, so you are in a really strong place when it comes to renewal to really scale it and continue it long term. So for me, it's number one. I suppose there's many tips and tricks. I suppose the first one would be the structure and making sure you have the stewardship plan in place, whether that's through playbooks, roadmaps, different project management tools, and it has to work for your team and your setup completely. But putting emphasis on structure is key. It always then takes the guesswork out of what a partner wants. I think you can sort of create that sort of flow and make sure you still have room for creativity, but it does need structure. Otherwise, it can become a bit sort of ad hoc, and it's very, very, very then time extensive. I suppose it's everyone knows it, but for me, it's the communication. Communication is number one. So it's number one because it enables you to create the trust that is needed to build the relationship. Because any sort of account manager will know that it's a balancing act. You're really having to understand the different perspective and stakeholders' needs and limitations in order for you to really create something that is beneficial. And in order to do that, you need full transparency, you need full trust. And that only comes with sort of creating the space to be able to do that. And that's obviously in your typical meeting styles or events that you do, but just putting the importance of it, number one, is I think the key thing. And then I suppose the other side is on inspiring and engaging your partners. So on the other side of communication is how can you inspire them about what you are doing? Because that's only going to create more love for what you're doing and why you are doing it. So outside of your key reporting timelines, how else can you communicate to them? Is there other sort of engaging content that can be created? Can it be shared through different platforms? Can you engage them through events that you're doing with? It all sounds quite common sense, but I think sometimes if you always go back to that core communication part, I think you're in a very strong place to be able to adapt to different roadblocks and challenges, and also adapt to opportunities that also come your way.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's really interesting. As someone sort of had not a huge amount of experience in this space, you think it sounds obvious to you, but it's important to sort of redraw those sort of basic things so people sort of know where to start, really. So, okay. And with Common Goal, as well as sort of attaining the funding from corporate sponsors, you also encourage footballers and football clubs to pledge. So could you tell us a little bit about that pledge side and how successful that has been as a goal and as a tool for Common Goal?
Yeah, so, and I think this is the part that most people know about Common Goal is the 1%. So we allow players, coaches, other stakeholders in the football industry to pledge 1% of their earnings to high impact projects around the world. And they can choose where that 1% goes to, if it's going to a single organization, or it could be going to our impact areas, like I said, gender equity, environmental action, and so on and so on. I remember switching back, but I remember when I was in my sort of interview stage of this job, and I had Thomas Price, who is the head of industry, and he's sort of one of the key pioneers, let's say, of this model. And I sort of asked him, what were you most proud of during your careers to date? And it was like, he always says there was this moment when Jurgen Klopp was on the, I think he was getting like an equivalent of a Ballon d'Or for a coach, and he got up on stage and all he said was, go look at Common Goal. And it crashed our website completely. And it created this buzz that I'm sure many people dream of, but don't know how to actually create. But the 1% will always be this incredible narrative for us, because it what we saw it as is this very simple way of understanding, or simple way of engaging. Like, as you can imagine, many football players, they work in very different environments, but they've a lot of the time just don't know how they can get involved. Like, how can they act? How can they actually give back? And the 1% is a very simple mechanic for them to just embed within their daily lives. And it obviously unlocks a huge amount of resource for us and also for many organizations around the world. It also has its challenges. As you can imagine, working with football players and their universes is not that simple. And also, we also have to be very strategic in that we have what is incredible is a very 50-50 split in terms of gender who are giving, but the women's game, unfortunately, and it is growing, but they're not getting paid the same amount as the men's game. So we want to make sure we are getting that equal split. But we do have to really understand how we are stewarding and creating that account management and keeping them engaged, because we're getting very different variables of sums. But equally, it's an incredible tool for us also visibly, because it allows us to also tap into players' audiences and to really sort of advocate through those channels as well. So, yeah, it's something that I know the team are also really analysing, to how can we really accelerate the 1% and how can we sort of work with the 1% and make it a bit more adaptable to the realities of what it is like working with different footballers, because many of these top-tier footballers have many different layers of contacts before you even get to them. So it's a constant sort of evaluating and understanding how the industry works, and like really understanding why footballers are giving and how can we sort of really educate them and engage them in a way that is really sort of inspiring, so they do proactively give the 1%. But yeah, it's an incredible model, and it's a great sort of revenue stream for us as well, and also for many other of the other organizations. And it's, I would say, probably our biggest flow of revenue to the organizations that we have as part of our community.
Absolutely. And what is your reach? Do you know how many footballers or clubs you have on, or is that too difficult to say at this point?
I think we have over 170. I think from over 50 countries worldwide. I think it's probably a lot larger than that. So we really do have an incredible and diverse group of members who really are some great social voices for us, and they really enable that impact and advocacy that we really are pushing for. So yeah, it's a big group, and it's definitely growing, which is great news.
Absolutely, and once one person in a team or a club does it, it sort of spreads the word naturally by each person sort of getting involved.
we recently started, obviously, one of the key catalysts for accelerating the change for us is competitions. As you can imagine, if you're embedding the 1% in FIFA in the Euros, in terms of the platform that creates from an awareness perspective, it's incredible. And also from generating revenue, that's also incredible. The other area would be sort of when we think about agent fees. That is a topic that is always talked about, I would probably say through a negative lens, because the amount of money that has been spent on transfer window. If you're embedding the 1% for us, that's just one step in the right direction. I think a lot more needs to happen than just a 1%. But for us, it's that sort of gateway for people also understanding why it's needed and why we need to make sure there is more purpose embedded in the whole of football. But in terms of clubs, we've got a couple that have onboarded. So we've got Werder Bremen, got a few clubs in Germany, Fortuna Düsseldorf. So we're really starting that. We started that last year in terms of a strategic objective for us. And as you just said then, once you've embedded it in the club, you then actually have staff that want to give their 1%, and you have staff that want to understand more and understand how they can get involved. You have then the whole football players wanting to get involved. So it becomes this sort of, you're unlocking many more opportunities just from getting the club initially engaged. So yeah, those sort of multipliers are key for us in terms of really scaling the movement and scaling the impact.
Absolutely. And it seems like it's a simple way for them to give. There's not, you know, obviously it's difficult in the decision-making process, but it's quite a simple process for them in terms of giving that and not having, you know, not having to think too hard about where that money goes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're really trying to understand the 1% within the partnership sphere as well, because not all our partners, 1% also doesn't necessarily translate as well into the corporate world. It can do, but you have to make sure it's not a blocker to the initial conversation, because I think many corporates can see 1% and it doesn't necessarily work with the way corporates understand giving yet. Mm-hmm. But I think the 1% is something we sometimes can strive for in the corporate space. Once we understand how each other work, what each other are after, like what are the key sort of fundamentals of this partnership. But with the corporate space, we navigate the 1% a little bit differently when we think about them as a stakeholder versus sort of the players and the clubs and the coaches.
Yeah. Okay. And so we've explored the corporate relationship side of Common Goals model and the pledge, but equally important is the collaboration that you have with so many grassroots organizations to localize your impact. You mentioned earlier about all the organizations you work with, and on the website it states 193 community organizations are involved in the movement, which is amazing. So what does that interaction look like? How does that work with your organization?
Yeah, I suppose the key benefits would be funding. As we all know, funding is key in order for you to enable the impact and exist. So many of the organizations are also looking at us for more opportunities to be able to channel funding to them. And that's whether that's through the 1%, whether that's through partners, whether that's through foundations. So we have lots of call for proposal processes, whether that's through partners like UEFA Foundation and so on. So it's really creating an understanding of the different funding opportunities that are available for them. Then the other side would be on the learning. So as part of our community of practice, there's lots of learning opportunities that we have when you are a member. So that's whether peer-to-peer, that is impact learning sessions. So we have quarterly impact learning sessions where we engage our community. So organizations that can be the lead voice within that, as well as players. So we're really bringing the movement together around topics of safeguarding or environmental action or fundraising opportunities. So we create lots of different opportunities to engage. We also have, one of the other benefits would be the visibility of being part of the movement. Of course, there is an opportunity through our channels, but there's also opportunities through partners. So with Adidas, we create a lot of storytelling opportunities and really want to engage and amplify the voices of communities around the world. So I would say there's like sort of the key benefits. And then how do we do it is our community team have a membership process. Top of my head, I can't remember the different timelines, but I think it's like two or three opportunities a year to apply to be part of the membership. And then there is a sort of process that then follows after that. But as part of that, there is sort of specific milestones. So there's sessions around safeguarding to make sure it's at the quality that is expected of within the industry. around fundraising as well, to make sure we're benchmarking against the quality that is expected as well within the industry. And then we have one-on-one sessions. So we really do try and find ways to create a real relationship and really understand the different environments that the community organizations are within and their staff and what they're doing in the incredible impact that they are creating on the ground. And we have a really great team here at Common Goal that really engage and make sure that relationship and that space is there for them to really have a platform for their voice to be heard. And for us to really understand as well the insights and the insights and the stories that they have, and to make sure we have that sort of flow, because that is key for us as well to engage partners, is to really get that sort of real insights and stories from the ground, which is incredible for us in terms of sort of making brands aware of this network and organizations and what they're doing.
Absolutely. And these organizations, are they mainly centered around football, or is that quite varied as well?
Varied, but as you can imagine, football is one of the most popular sports. So many of the organization, one of the sports that is within their sort of program is football, but it's not always. So we have a partnership with Adidas called Move for the Planet, which is around sustainability. And as part of that process and the organizations that are within that, we have really varied sports. So, and it just depends to what is popular, I suppose, in their community. So you have pickleball, for example, which I only heard of more recently. I think it's really big in the US. We have volleyball to tennis to martial arts, etc. So many of the community organizations have variety of sports that they use as a tool to create the change. However, there is a common thread that football is one of the most played sports across the globe. So we don't, obviously they have a lot of their programs running, and that isn't for us to intervene. We can only support that. But generally, as part of the programs that we support within the organization, it will be the ones that have football at the heart of it.
Yeah. Okay. And as nonprofits sort of continue to see their revenue hit by a combination of inflation, cost of living crisis, etc., do you think across the sector we'll see more collaboration and more examples of sort of smaller charities working together under a sort of an umbrella organization like yours?
I hope so. Us, we do think that collaboration is key in order for us to really enable and create the society that we want, and a better society for all. It's just not hard. It is hard, is what I'm trying to say. In terms of actually putting collaboration into practice, it takes a lot of sort of time and understanding to understand how you can do it. In terms of community organizations, I think we have more proof points that it is happening. So within Common Goal, we also have many organizations that are collaborating together, whether that's sharing knowledge, whether that's sharing resources. I know one example is many of the organizations really struggle to engage young girls and women within their programs. And one of the sort of key criteria is being part of Common Goal is creating a fair gender split and really engaging different communities, non-binary girls and women, men and boys. So a lot of our community organizations, and it generally is ones that are probably closer on the ground, but they really work together to understand how can we engage the women and girls in their community, which is incredible. But when it comes to, I would say, collaboration on the sort of corporate side, it's not, I think it's of equal importance as well. So if you can bring competitors together for the greater good, I think that's a really powerful statement. And I think it also goes a long way in sort of creating that safe, inclusive and diverse society. It's, as you can imagine, it's just not easy because everyone, especially in the corporate space, different drivers, different KPIs. But I think through an organization like Common Goal, I do think we can help to be that connector and that sort of that person that can bring everybody together and unifies it under a social cause. So I hope, and I think as we scale as well, the movement, and as we grow, we will be able to create more sort of proof points of why it's important and how it is enabled the certain objectives. But I definitely think from a community perspective, it will increase. I think, like you said, because of the economic situation that we are in, I think many organizations will have to look to their friends and other organizations to really drive that support that is needed and that share of knowledge and expertise. And we've definitely found within Common Goal is really valuable. And we have many organizations sharing on a regular basis to really support their objectives and missions.
Absolutely. And it's sort of just where to start, I think, for a lot of these organizations. So a company or an organization like Common Goal is is obviously a great place. So you help with that sort of sharing of knowledge and funding, etc. So it's really interesting, and it's been really insightful. Thank you so much. I think we're almost running out of time, but is there anything else you wanted to share with the listeners before we hop off?
Well, I suppose thank you for having me, for starters. And I think it's, for me, it's just, yeah, I suppose if you're listening and you're coming from a charity, it's just obviously keep plugging and advocating for what you're doing, and really just making sure that the cause is visible. Because I think the more we can talk about things, obviously the impact that has globally is fantastic. And yeah, if anyone ever wants to reach out and understand more about what Common Goal does, then we're obviously more than happy to connect and collaborate and really understand and understand what you are doing and so on. So yeah, it's more of an open invite to learn more if it's of interest.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I'm sure we're going to have some people take you up on that offer. So if you want to learn more about Common Goal and what they're doing, head to www.common-goal.org. As always, we would love to hear your thoughts on what we've discussed today. So feel free to email podcast@gibbydoo.com. You can also make suggestions on future guests or topics you'd love to hear on the show. Thank you again, and don't forget to hit subscribe and follow, as our next episode will be coming out very soon.